implementing dynamic access control.
Yeah.
Or is not what we're talking about.
Or direct access.
We're talking direct access with this one.
Why do we get those two mixed up? They both begin with D, right?
And they're also both really cool technologies.
They are really cool, yes. How about we do them both?
One of them is net new, which is
net new?
Dynamic access control.
Net new?
Net new. And net one new. Of them is a refined version of what existed in 2019.
Not new?
It's not new. Net new and not new.
Yes.
Got it?
Okay, got
it. You following me?
No.
You're on the same page.
No, I'm answering questions.
Okay, so you keep on answering questions because there's a large backlog of questions, and we're going to be working through them as fast as we can. And possibly if some interesting ones pop up, we'll actually take them live. That's what we're doing.
So direct access.
And I will say, direct access is what we're talking about. And even after this particular module wraps up on the questions and answers area, we will also be trying to answer them as well. So kudos out there to everyone that is sticking along and answering and plugging through those things. We're talking direct access, which is something that I absolutely freaking love because I use it every day. Every day. I work for Microsoft now for 8 years, and the last 3 years now, I think, there is direct access been enabled for me as a mobile employee, which means that I literally can, whenever I have internet connectivity, I can just simply be a managed workstation resource, just as if I was inside the brick and mortar walls that are inside the system. And so,
couldn't you just do that with VPNs?
It's way better than VPNs. I got a whole story to talk about VPNs and my beef with them from last night.
Hey, real quick before you go any further, I just want to remind everybody to please vote in the poll if you haven't already.
What's the poll about? Do you know? What's
the poll about? I'm just being yelled at by our producers to have them vote in the poll.
The poll is about what your role is right now, I think.
Yes. So.
Your organization's relationship
with Microsoft.
Okay.
Nice. Okay.
Now back to direct access.
Back to
why
segue.
It's very, very cool.
You got direct access. So let's go back and take a look at this over here. So this is the last module for this big chunk of a day. If you're watching this live, we're going to be taking a break to get some sleep, rehydrate, and getting some new nutrition, and then come back again for the next time for module 7 on day 2. But this one is direct access, and we're going to be looking at what it is and how to configure it. And I will say that this is a relatively lengthy content chunk that we're going to be talking about here. One of the biggest critiques, if you will, that existed of direct access and why a lot of people did not implement it were a couple of fold, really. The one reason why a lot of people did not implement it was because it was complex to be able to implement in the past. It had some pretty stringent requirements that had to be in place to be able to run it and to use it. Those have been removed and simplified. Another issue also came up with people didn't think it was scalable enough for what they're trying to do for their workforces. So we'll talk about an overview of what direct access is and then how to go off and to install it and how to configure it. We're not going to have the time to be able to show you how it actually works and looks because it's a lab environment for what we have right now. It's more important about just being able to figure out how to get this up and working. So the problems with remote connectivity, and this is where a little sort of a debate comes in here, buddy. Because you keep on mentioning VPNs.
What kind of problems?
You keep on mentioning VPNs. So to me, at first I thought direct access was this ginormous, draconian environment that basically controlled people as an administrator can, regardless of where they are. But then I kind of flipped that on its ear and said, you know what, this actually isn't about draconian control. It's about simply better management, which is not the same thing as draconian control.
See, I always just thought direct access was VPN with the need for IPv6 and PKI.
There's more intelligence to it for what you can do with it.
It sure is.
So
go figure.
You can implement, again, health policies for what state your machine has to be in. As soon as your machine has internet connectivity and it's been configured to use direct access, it can basically go in and make the connection over top of whatever internet connection it's using. It could be a broadband connection if you wanted to. It also has the ability to go off and to basically configure itself after it's been deployed to your workstation, before you even log on, because the workstation's IP stack initializes as the machine's initializing before you even have the log on process. So in the past, when I had to manage my environments as a VPN user, I only would have the ability to touch that machine that's reaching into my environment when it initiated the log on, when it initiated the VPN connection. I could quarantine it, I could do some other stuff to it, that's about it. And then that was it. So I had a fleeting glimpse of when I could go off and manage that box. Now, literally, I'm able to set up the same type of security with my group policy, my health control, all the sort of stuff I normally would do for machines that are now very seldom connected into my environment because of what you can do with direct access.
Now, so, you know, with me, it's never been really VPN versus direct access. It's why not use remote desktop gateway?
Remote desktop gateway requires user intervention to know to go to remote desktop gateway, to go in and use an application or you publish the application that's outside that's now available to that user account. So, yes, but this is more ubiquitous because remote access gateway is only going to give you access to the app that you're looking for. This actually allows me to apply group policy down in the box. This allows me to deploy software. This allows me to remote desktop into that box remotely. So it's more than just simply publishing apps, and it's also more than simply initiating a VPN connection in.
So would it be easier if I just say, okay, we'll use direct access?
You got it.
Okay.
You got it.
Now, okay, we'll use direct access.
You got
okay.
it. So... What is direct access? It connects automatically to the corporate network over any public network that you have. It
any uses public network?
Any public network that you got. So that could be hotel connection. The reason why it's able to do this is it starts
from
at from Canada even some of those major universities you can connect up to and go down.
They have major universities?
They have major universities up in Canada.
Wow,
believe it or
okay.
not. There is life north of the 49th parallel. the concept is basically it will start off with a variety of protocols starting at the most complex and the most secure, and then walk its way down through to the most common. Most complex and most secure is basically IPv6 connectivity with IPsec. The least the still secure but more prevalent and more commonly dispersed is something as simple as RPC over HTTPS connectivity into that particular gateway. So as long as you can get an HTTPS connection out of your environment, and you've got it set up to work in that fashion, you can make a connection back into your remote access, direct access gateway server. It supports server access as well as IPsec authentication. You can control which servers you have access to. And this is a little bit of a complaint for me. Not really a complaint, but simply an observation. We were set up our demo environments, and I gave you my laptop to be able to practice with for some of your demos. And I was using my cluster environment that's inside a lab that was provided to me by the file server team. The file server team gave me this awesome Quanta cluster in a box that I'll be talking about tomorrow. It's a beautiful box.
But it looked like you were doing me a favor lending me
your laptop.
Your great laptop when really
I'm just letting you use that, distracting you so I can use the real
thing.
It was
a hand-me-down. Still just a hand-me-down.
The problem was that the IPsec policy that Microsoft uses, I have to assume because I don't know because I'm not part of MSIT. Mm-hmm. Basically, I was authorized and clean enough to be able to connect up with direct access and have access to my regular corporate resources, but I was not allowed to be able to talk to my lab environments because the lab in question was set up outside of my IPsec scope for what I was allowed to talk to. So, my bad. I had a problem, and I couldn't actually remote access it inside my demos to be able to practice.
Is that why I found you here at 3 in the morning?
So I was here early, very early, making sure things were working. I was able to do it through a VPN connection, but then what happens to VPN connections?
Well, they drop.
Yes.
And then they connect.
And then they
what
drop.
What about VPN Reconnect? Wasn't that big, that was the former big deal, right?
Picture yourself being able to go in and saying, make a direct VPN connection into my box, and then once I'm in there, I'll be able to talk to my different servers. But then your internet connectivity in your hotel, or in this case, my house, happened to degrade itself to a certain level of performance, where all of a sudden it would just drop the connection. What am I doing over that VPN connection? I'm using a remote desktop into the lab, which was working. But then the underlying network kind of went funky and wonky and disappeared. All of a sudden, my screen would freeze, and I would have no idea why. It's because the network wasn't working. Then eventually, the pop-up would say, oh, you've disconnected. Do you want to reconnect? It was taking me way too long. So anyway.
This is going to be the beginning of if somebody's listening right now, this is going to be the beginning of, I don't know what internet provider you have, but the competitor is going to bring you onto their next commercial.
You never know. Hey, I could be there.
Yeah.
I would definitely be into it. If someone wants to approach me on that, my email address is... You got it. What else do we do with the capabilities of direct access? It supports end-to-end authentication and encryption, so everything is completely and totally secure. Security guys get a little bit worried about anytime access to their resources, but the reality is if you have good management capabilities in place and you have good practices in place to be able to secure your systems and you have well-managed systems, it doesn't matter if they're connecting inside or outside the firewall because you literally have to change your mindset to think, even though he's remote and using a public space, all the communications happen encrypted through my gateway into my local resources. I can control where he's going, what he's doing, if he's allowed to connect in the first place. And then you can even put parameters around bandwidth capabilities, too, if you wanted to. So, for instance, they can't use direct access over top of a 3G connection or something like that. But it allows remote users to connect directly to any intranet server you provide them with access to. The benefits, obviously, is always on connectivity, seamless connectivity, bidirectional access, managed out support, improved security. Like, literally, I was actually at home one time working on stuff, and I received a software update that was pushed out by Microsoft IT because I had internet connectivity and my laptop was on. It just all of a sudden started to do software install, rebooted, and then came back up again. I'm like, oh, yeah, direct access. It did that. Very, very cool stuff. So what's new with 2012 really comes down to improved management. So basically, I'll be the first to say, some of the requirements to set up direct access were a little challenging to make sure that they work for everybody. It seemed to be tailored more for the larger enterprise space than anyone else. Now it's gotten a lot easier, and you'll see that in the end of my demo to be able to set this guy up. Direct access can now coexist with your remote routing and access services system, so your RRAS system. Accounting and reporting is now built in, and even better to be able to see who's using it, what they're doing it to. Complete and total PowerShell support, and even server core support. So you could also set up direct access. Picture this, branch office, direct access for the server, talking back to the main guy without a VPN tunnel being made because he's using direct access. Same thing with all your clients.
Fun Pretty times. Cool. You know, why don't we, speaking of that demo, do we want to start getting into it? Because there's a couple of wait periods in there. I don't want us to run out of time.
Hang in there, man. Hang on. No, it's almost. I don't want
almost.
To assist yet.
Okay.
I see you talk a bit more about some stuff. Simplified access for being able to set it up. As I mentioned, it works with your existing infrastructure. Small and medium deployments can work very, very fast. I'm going to be doing you a larger employment with a certificate service, that sort of stuff, so it's a bit larger.
Wait, what's that middle bullet point say right there?
IPv6 for internal networking is not required.
Not required.
Because it has translation
How many people have you heard say...
I can't do direct access because it has IPv6 requirements. It's not required.
I mean, that's a whole different discussion. Let's bring IPv6 in. But if you haven't yet, still okay.
The other thing is it requires now you can have the guy behind your firewall. It can be behind a NAT firewall.
Behind the NAT.
A single NIC adapter can now be used for your direct access. And also a single IP address. Before, it used to have two IP addresses to figure out NAT stuff. Now it just needs the one. Scalability-wise, it now supports a better availability of multiple third-party load balancers. Before it didn't, so things that people like F5 and stuff like that make load balancers for it. It's got improved capability and support for receive-site scaling for virtual machines. It does IP-HTTPS interoperability for performance and offloading. Bandwidth utilization has gone down, streamlined encryption, yada, yada, yada. The big thing as well is multiple scenarios for endpoints. It used to be you'd have one endpoint for the world, and then you would have load balancers in front of that. Now you can have multiple endpoints around the world to be able to choose the best connectivity layers for you for where your network happens to be. So very, very cool stuff. The server can be behind a NAT, and also one-time passwords and virtual smart cards can now be used as well to get people in and off and working. Component-wise, what do we got? We've got internet websites, we've got internet internal resources, and we've got Active Directory with DNS servers, so basically it's your typical environment. You'll have to have a PKI deployment for larger enterprise-scale solutions, just so you know, for multi-site capabilities and for other things like that.
But do you need PKI in a smaller environment?
Smaller environment, you can get away without. And so just another, use the quick deploy wizard.
Just I need to point that out because that's another big one is the two big things that people said they couldn't do. Not that they wouldn't do, but that they couldn't do direct access because they didn't have IPv6 and they didn't have a PKI.
Yep.
So now, no excuses.
Yep. Again. Smaller, medium-sized environments, larger, you're going to want to have a PKI in place. You probably already do. Direct access server can sit on the edge in between multiple NICs. It can sit behind single NIC. Your choice how you want to do this. You then have a network location server. It's basically an internal website that the client uses to check to say, hey, am I inside or am I outside? If I'm inside, don't worry about direct access. If I'm outside, okay, I got to build up a bunch of stuff to be able to get off and working. My external client computer is going to be using connectivity rules, group policy configuration, certificates, IPsec rules, stuff like that, that it got from the inside, so from group policy at some point in time. Or there's a new option. You can actually go off and do an offline domain join and include direct access configuration inside that offline domain join. But that's more of a client technology that's available. And then, again, that name resolution policy table, or NRPT, that identifies what are internal resources, what are external resources as well. You'll be making an IPv6 tunnel through your Direct Access server, walking down through a variety of different tunneling technologies if you need to get down and talking to your Direct Access server, ultimately talking to the authorized internal network resources you're allowed to access. Internal client computers function the exact same way as they always had, and they're all good. So this thing called Name Resolution Policy Table, or NRPT, defines which DNS servers answer your questions for specific DNS zones. I don't want the public Microsoft.com DNS server answering my internal questions about our corporate environment. I want my internal ones to answer those ones there. So my NRPT space basically is what gets used. And you can see here for being able to set up a Name Resolution Policy Templates and what that looks like. How Direct Access works for internal client computers, basically they go off and they get their connection rules and their old existing NRPT tables. They'll go off and talk to the domain controller for any group policy updates that receives it. They're checking to see if they have access to the internal website that basically identifies your inside as opposed to outside. They'll talk to you and update their certificates if they require them to be able to see if their certificate's been deauthorized and they're in the revocation list. And then basically they can go off and update information as they require it from the domain controller. Pretty simple stuff. How Direct Access works for internals, and basically now for external side of things, you've got your external clients that have already had their policies applied to them from group policy, or they've used the offline domain join with Direct Access bits added into it. And then they're able to identify, what is my policy table for name resolution? What is my security connection? Where am I connecting back into to be able to do it? And then finally, it goes off and makes a connection to the infrastructure server, talks to Active Directory, talks to your internal resources as required. So this does require that you have access to a 2012 domain controller to be able to make this all happy and work. The last little bit about this for client computers is you can set this up so that they can have a pipe for internal infrastructure requirements and internal intranet servers that is separate from the regular external browsing of the web and surfing of YouTube and stuff like that if you wanted to, as opposed to having it all route through the corporate network. So, last slide before I actually show you how to configure this and all the steps required to get this up and working is simply what you need to have. And this is a build slide that talks about, well, you got to have Active Directory, 2008 or 2 or 2012. You have to have group policy defined, which is part of the wizard process to be able to define your rules. You have to have DNS and domain controllers, which are running 2008 or 2 and or 2012. You have to have a PKI infrastructure if you're looking at a larger implementation to be able to do certificate revocation, not required for small, medium sizes. IPsec policies in place if you want to use IPsec as a way of restricting what machines you can go and talk to. You need to have ICMP v6 echo traffic to be able to basically check and see where you're trying to get to inside and outside of your networks. And then finally, your transition in technologies for being able to go off and translate and tunnel through a variety of methods to get and talk to your IPv6 resources. So, let's step back and take a look at how we're going to be configuring this. I need to first of all go off and configure groups for delegated access for who is allowed to go in and identify who's going to be using active direct access. I then need to go off and basically configure some firewall rules to make sure that things are all happy and working. And then I need to go in and actually configure some certificates because I'm using an enterprise level certificate store because I've got my certificate store up and running for a PKI environment. You then configure your Direct Access server, which literally is a wizard interface to answer some questions. And then that wizard interface is going to go and chunk and chunk and chunk and chunk through and then identify, here are the group policy objects that have been made, here are the IPsec tables that are being used, here are the rules that are being used, here is everything else that's going on with my environment, and then this will be applied to my authorized clients. And my authorized clients have to be part of a group that I created the very first step. So I'm going to walk you through what each one of those different things are. Any questions before we get started, before I jump into this, or what?
There was one question. I'm trying to find it here. As far as somebody was saying that they couldn't implement Direct Access not because of IPv6, not because of PKI, but because of restriction on split tunnels. Do you, any idea if that's addressed?
Split tunneling is possible.
It is possible now.
Yes, you can do split tunneling.
Okay.
So, where am I at here? Taking a breather. I've got to take a breath. Okay. So let's start off, and we're going to be doing this guy here on my domain controller. So, I got some crib sheet notes here I'm going to be using to kind of try to keep track of stuff. So, bear with me as I flounder through a couple of these different things. The first thing that we need to do, obviously, is going off and using Active Directory using computers to be able to go off and to make an OU structure. So, get off here using my all servers, right mouse click on him to say Active Directory user computers. And I'm going to make a new OU structure just off in the root to make this nice and simple. New OU, and I'm going to call this guy my DA clients OU structure. Inside my DA clients, I'm going to go in and say new group. And in this new group, I'm going to call this guy DA underscore clients. You can use whatever name you wanted to. The big thing is this guy here, it's a security group, and it's global. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to modify this group to say members of this group are computer accounts that are authorized to use the service in the first place. So I've got to change my object types from being users to also include computers. And I want to say DA. No, I want to say, who is this guy that's going to be added in here? I'm going to say lawn SVR, and I'm going to choose number 3, as that is going to be allowed for members as examples for what can be used. So he's now listed, and he's okay. So ideally, this would actually be client systems. So that's, you know, at different companies I've seen, they basically have like a sign-up process to say you want to apply for this. There's a review process to understand you know what it's about. And then they simply add your computer accounts to this one group. This group will be used inside my environments as a restriction to say which group policies are going to be applied to these machines, and they will be allowed to be able to use group allowed to use direct access. Very, very simple stuff to start this guy off. Next up is doing some firewalls. Now, this is going to be for some ICMP v6 traffic to basically do some testing back and forth to see if there's connectivity working. So very simple sort of stuff initially. And to do this, I'm going to go off and use my group policy management console to go off and edit my default domain policy. And I'm going to go down to my, where is it? Make this guy bigger. You guys can see this. Under computer configuration, policies, Windows settings, security settings. And I'm going to say Windows firewall with advanced security. And I'm going to say Windows firewall with advanced security. And I'm going to say both an inbound and an outbound rule. And I'm going to make one. And this new rule is going to be a custom rule that I create. And this is simply to allow ICMP v6 echo traffic back and forth between these different servers that are going to be using this. So I'm going to say all programs, the protocol type that I'm going to use in this case, I'm going to say ICMP v6 echo, there we go, and customize button, and specifically I want to say just the echo request is added in, and then I'm going to say protocols and port page, inbound and outbound rules for any IP address is fine. For the scope, action-wise, I'm going to say go ahead and allow the connections across all my profiles. And I'm simply going to call this guy my ICMP v6 echo. That's inbound rule. And, of course, it disappeared. Where'd it go? Inbound rule ICMP 6 v echo. There we go. Exact same rule, but this time on the outbound side of things, so bear with me as the exact same steps are done. Again, custom rule, all programs, choose ICMP v6, hit customize, I'm choosing just the echo request, and then I'm going to go in and choose any addresses that's going to be allowed on. I'm going to say allow the connection to go through, available on all domains, and then finish, specify the rule name, which is outbound ICMP v6. So this is basically good for diagnostics. So I got my inbound and I got my outbound, double checking to see if it says any port, remote port, authorized. Yep, all good. Outbound rules basically should say the exact same thing. It's all good. My two rules have been created for my ICMP check for IPv6. That guy's good for my group policies for now. Next up is we need to create some records that the direct access clients are going to be checking for. DNS records, where's my DNS manager? Right there. Just happen to have it open from my previous labs. So this is quite simply, here's my 8-datum zone that I'm going to be using for. I want to make a new record in here. hoster quadruple A. And in this case, I'm going to create one called NLS because that's what the system is going to be looking for. And the IP address of the website that's going to be checking where only will be available if it's inside my corporate network firewall, brick and mortar walls.
Right.
That's where they have access to it. I'm just going to do 172.16.0.22. Add the host, and he's good. I'm going to make another one, which is going to be used by the client system, which is my certificate revocation server, CRL. And that guy there is going to keep the list of where the certificate revocation is going to be, 172.16.0.22. Add the host, and then done. Did I add that one? No. I hit cancel. Oops. CRL. 172.16.0.22. Add host. Then hit done. Much better. There we go. DNS settings are done. Really, NLS is used simply to associate, is this machine internal or external? CRL is used to basically revoke certificates in case of any kind of problems. Now, in my PKI environment, looks like you have a question.
I'm
nervous.
I was just going to throw something out there. I've seen a question come up a couple times. So at least three times I've seen it, as far as going back to IPv6, especially with what you're going through right now, is there's a conflict of information in the sense that we had a slide that said IPv6 is required, yet we're sitting here saying that it's not required. So I believe... And
for basic functionality, going in, authenticating, accessing to limited number of resources that are internally, you do not need IPv6 because it can use translation or tunneling technologies.
Right, and that's just it. That's the key right there, is the translation or tunneling technologies.
Right.
In the sense that...
In the past, you used to have to buy a device that would do that translation for me,
right.
for you. Don't have to worry about that.
Right, but to end the confusion, it's essentially IPv6 is needed. It's needed. The technology is needed. You don't have to implement it manually because of the transition and tunneling technologies that Windows Server 2012 now has to offer. Okay, just so that some clarity on that. And that's not just a question I'm seeing popping up here in the Q&A, but
that comes up
every time I've talked direct access with anybody in Windows Server 2012, they ask that question again and again.
Okay, good.
So, thanks,
Rick. Good. Okay, continuing on. What have we done? Just a little bit of review. We've done the DNS entries for two entries.
I took a nap.
That was the last module. So we did the DNS entries for the am I inside or outside, as well as where can I find out if my certificate's been expired or not. Again, this is for a larger implementation. This isn't for small, medium biz. I've also gone ahead and identified a group that I'm going to be using to be able to identify who is allowed to use direct access. I put a server name in there because that's all I have in my demo environment is servers. Normally you put clients in there. I've also gone in and I've set up a group policy that's going to go in and open up the firewall port for IPv6 echo only for connectivity purposes to see am I communicating correctly with my servers or not for diagnostic purposes. That's all we've done so far. We haven't even run the wizard yet.
Right.
So
and it's good and it's good to point out, and maybe you did point this out, is you're on a system that isn't touching the outside world right now. So
right.
So this is all being done just on a strictly internal server.
Right. And also, just to, as you'll see when I actually run the wizard, this is the prep steps to run the wizard if you're doing a real full-size deployment. If you're doing just an evaluation, how does this work, what I want to do with it, you simply can do what's known as a quick config and then literally have this up and running with minimal interface issues whatsoever. But again, it's not exactly a scalable solution. You'd want to go off and do the full-size implementation like I'm doing right now. Let's go back to my demo here because I need to go in and do my PKI environment now. So.
Yes. So we don't need PKI.
PKI is for the larger implementations with certificate revocations.
Just so I had to throw that out there
because
I know that...
You're just trying to warp my brain.
No, it's because the Q&A is going to get inundated with... I thought he said you don't need PKI and now he's doing PKI. So.
You got it. So with my certificate authority up in here, basically I've got my certificate authority up and running. I'm going to go off and choose properties of this guy here to be able to go in and double check some of the extensions that are going to be used. Now this takes a little bit of time to pull up. When I pull up the properties, I'll have the ability to go off the extensions tabs. And what I'm going to be doing is basically building, here it comes right here, I'm basically going to be building the ability for a client to hit a website and get more detailed information besides simply getting certs issued to them, and that's it. So here's my extensions. On my extensions tab, basically I want to go in and add a brand new one. And the location I want to be using for this is http://crl.adat. adatum.com. So remember, that's that entry that I put in. That's the website that I'm hosting on it. And there's going to be a web subfolder called CRLD for certificate revelation distribution. And then I'm going to add in additional variables. And the first variable I'm going to add in is called my CNAME inside there. Oops, I need to have a slash first before I do that. There we go. And then I need to go in and add in my suffix, CRL name suffix. And then I need to go in the proper order. There we go.
Slash.
You got it. No slash this time. Insert the suffix. And then I go in and do deltas allowed. Insert. And then finally, I simply go in and add in the lovely .crl. And so what's going to happen is these variables are what this clients are going to hit this guy with and identify these additional variable details, and the certificate revocation server is going to know what to do with this to be able to do something, issue a certificate or not, is it still valid. So it's all good. Hit OK. Clients use this basically to basically connect up and use the certificates. We're all good, and it's all done. Next up, I want to add another location. This time it's for my internal resources. So in this case, it's going to be a server file share, which is lawn SR SVR 2.
Lawn.
London. L-O-N. Server 2.
Lawn.
Make sure I'm not making any typos here, eh?
Okay.
CRLDIST $\, and then same thing, CNAME, suffix, delta, and those are the three that have to be added, and add in a dot CRL, hit insert, actually hit OK, because it's already done, and it is good to go, hit apply, and because it's the second one that I added in, I can now go ahead and restart just to be able to take a look at this. I added in that guy right there and that guy right there, so I want to restart my certificate authority to basically get him up to date and now realize there's some new answers to it. Revocation list basically is simply allow direct access clients and servers to determine if the certificates they're using for authentication have been revoked as opposed to
valid.
A group check. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, that's done for certificates on that guy for this point in time. Now, for Active Directory, machines have to auto-enroll for certificates. By default, they don't do it, so you got to go in and add this in. So for this, I have to actually go into Group Policy Management once again. Where is it? Right here. And I want to go into my forest and into, once again, my default domain policy because it's easy to hit. Edit that guy.
Don't all our group policies belong in the default domain policy?
No, they don't all belong there. This is a demo environment, folks. Windows settings, security settings, and then public key policies. You'll see here on a public key policies, I have a, where is it? Automatic certificate requests. There we go. Settings. New automatic certificate request. Configure that guy in. And I simply want to say yes, make it a new computer template. Hit next. Go ahead and hit finish. That guy's now turned on and he's all set. Next up, on the Direct Access server that is going to be running Direct Access, which is server number 2.
But the question I still have for you is, do we need IPv6?
Are you trying to screw with me, man?
No.
Honestly.
And what would the answer to that be?
Yes.
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 No, actually, I just find it interesting that the more we answer IPv6 questions, the more come in. That's all. It's a continuing discussion on IPv6.
Okay, on London Server 2, I'm just going to go in now because I've made changes to group policy. I've made it so that there are now ability to go off and request computer certificates that are in there. So in here, I'm just going to say GP update /force. Get that guy up to date. Once that guy is up to date, I'm just going to go off and run my MMC command to be able to open up the local certificates and request one. It's getting the rights to be able to add some guys in. Let's go. Any questions? Right. Timing coming in. Group policy. My hard drives are pegged right now. Getting this guy applied.
Well, yeah, I got plenty of IPv6 questions. Yeah, I tell you what. You know what? Most of the IPv6 questions are surrounding, and I think it's fairly obvious with some of the answers that are coming through from different people. There's a lot of questions about what if you disable IPv6 on a machine?
You know, then they can't use direct access.
Correct.
That's about as easy as it gets.
You have to have
it. Client-wise, it has to be Windows 7 Enterprise.
Right,
Windows 8
and there's
Enterprise.
A continued discussion going on as far as why disabled IPv6. It doesn't actually do anything for you. It doesn't speed up your machine. So if you're going to use direct access, leave IPv6 enabled. You don't necessarily have to configure it. Yep. Leave it enabled.
You got it.
Other than that, there's a lot of... It's obvious that we are getting to the end of our day because there's a lot of humor going on here.
Good. I'm glad because this is pretty boring watching this... Yeah. Policy that's going on there.
Has anybody kept a tally as to how many times Rick has said A?
Or out. My accent
out
comes
about.
Out and about. The next, I'll tell you what.
How
the
long
next
is that bar going to go across the screen? More than the 15 minutes we got left?
Believe it or not, I hope so. what I'm doing right now is we're obviously waiting for the GPO to update, and this guy's happy. I don't know why he's taking so long.
I could do a little dance.
You could do a dance if you wanted to. Update the policy. Oh. Coming. It's like, what did I do to my? Did I screw up my group policy or something like that, or what? I don't think I did. Anyway,
we'll say you did.
The next step is I go into certificate management on the local computer because this is the server that's running it, mm-hmm. and basically I have to go in and request a certificate for the local box for the purposes of the website that is going to be used for. Detection of if I'm inside or outside, as well as for certificate revocation. That's what this is trying to do. Yay, it finished.
Ta-da!
So, on this local box for server number 2...
Does it have to be an enterprise CA?
No.
No? It could be a standalone? Sorry.
I reserve to answer that question until tomorrow. How's that?
Okay.
Or this someone that's it's in the Q&A that's more up to date with what's going on can answer that one there. add remove snap-ins. Rick is slowly decomposing out here. Change the computer account. Get that guy running the local computer. Have him up and running. Under local certificates, under personal certificates for the local machine. I've got the London server 2. A datum has happened to be up and running. He's all happy. I want to go in here and simply say under certificates, all tasks, request new certificates. And then I want to say basically, yes, I can enroll. Thank you very much. I want to use whatever policies available in Active Directory. And then I should have the ability to see here, the ability to request a web identity. Come up, please. No. It didn't show up. It didn't refresh correctly. It's missing my step.
Well, I've been told here by somebody that that's because a watched policy never updates. So
that is,
stop watching it.
That is true. Stop watching it. But you know what's so funny is that basically I'm at the last part where basically I just need to go in on my CRL, which is my certificate revocation server, which is this guy. I need to go in. I can run the group update policy again, I guess. But I basically need to go in and request another one for certificate templates. For server, and then basically run my update wizard. So let me show you what the wizard looks like.
Let's just look at the wizard.
We're coming in the home stretch. We're
not going to be able to connect anyway.
I can't test it because
right.
I'm internal.
We're internal
anyway.
Only. So.
Right, so we're just going to say leave that as it is and then put it there. And then I want to go into direct access setup on London Server 2. Where is it here? For tools and say remote access management and fire this guy up. Now, caveat, I will be getting some errors in this one because I don't have my certificates finalized and stuff like that, but I'll show you what this web interface looks like, this wizard interface looks like. If this was configured, which we're going to start the configuration process and look at another progress bar for probably the next 10 minutes as it finishes, it would actually show you, is it operational, what's running, what's not running, in my edge configured, how many clients are running on it. So some great status information is going to be on here. Instead, what I'm going to do here is simply going up to my configuration area and then answering some questions on it. So welcome to Direct Access Wizard. Remote client computers are not configured for direct access. Clients can connect up over the system. Hit next. It's going to check all my prerequisites. Progress bar number 3 coming across. These systems are animated as opposed to sitting at a command prompt waiting for stuff. Did I miss any steps? No, I think I got them all. Any questions on the queue you wanted to bring up or like that?
Yeah, I'm trying to filter through a lot of these because there are a lot. We're doing, and I have to tell you, we're doing our best to try to crank through these. And again, another shout out and a thank you to all the rest of the support staff who's helping out with this. I'm just looking to see. I mean, it looks like a lot of people still have a lot of stress, maybe, over IPv6 and PKI. And
yeah, I mean,
do you have any general recommendations? And you know, earlier we talked about stress on PowerShell and how to get past that.
Well, honestly, I think the kind of flow of the demo that I wanted to try to get through here, I was aiming at the wrong level. Like, basically, I was aiming at the enterprise guys that says, this is the way you do it. Really, it can be
How'd
as easy. It didn't go very well, as you can see, because my progress bar is still going there. Really, you can set this sort of stuff up in a hands-on lab environment. Obviously, there's actually some hands-on labs about direct access, how to be able to get that up and working. But there's also some good white papers on it. But even better, you can try this out yourself. If instead you skip all that stuff I did at the very beginning, which is making the group, setting up the certificates, setting up the group policies for that sort of stuff, and you let the wizard do the configuration, honestly, it seems a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a lot easier because we have simplified it. I kind of made it a bit more obtuse, I guess you would
say. Right.
by diving right in.
Something that was difficult, it was made easier, and
then
we went and made it difficult again.
Right.
Okay.
So if you forget the last 20 minutes
Congrats.
Of what happened and just
yes.
focus on this wizard, you will see that you can still come out with a working environment, not necessarily what I would call an enterprise-grade, massively scalable solution, because you need the extra pieces in there that I was trying to show you. But it does give you the ability to understand how you can set this up, how you can make this work for a small, medium business, and how it doesn't need to have the certificate background to be able to get it up and working.
You know, I can't remember back with the slides. Is there a slide on the true minimum requirements? There's a question about minimum requirements to set this up in a smaller environment. Or can we bring up that minimum requirement slide and address the small environment
okay.
so that everyone can get going on this?
I'll see what I can do.
Okay.
Come on back to this demo for 1 second because I at least want to show you we got past the progress bar.
We got past that bar. Okay.
And I wanted to go in past the introduction screen and say select your group. So this was the bare minimums. What group do you want to put your computer accounts in to identify who is allowed to use any of this infrastructure? So I already have a group that created. I'm just going to say add in DA clients. I've already put the group inside of it, and then say, next. Where do I want to make this guy sit? Now, one of the easier ways to be able to do it is to be able to go in and to use an edge configuration where this guy sits as the firewall on both sides. That's the original way of doing this. But this guy can actually sit behind an edge device. And I can also sit behind an edge device with either a single network adapter, so that eliminates a huge barrier of configuration settings, or with two network adapters. So we've made this as flexible as possible that's in there. I just had a question that came up to me here is saying, do I need to raise forest and domain functional levels to be able to use this? Believe it or not, you don't need to have.
I don't think you do.
No, there's no force functional changes.
Wait,
you have to have a 2012 domain controller. It does not need to be a force functional level. A force functional level can stay at 2008 R2.
Level. But not 2003.
Not 2003 R2. Levels.
So it does have to be raised to at least to 2008.
Right. But really, there's not too much of a reason why you'd still be running 2003 domain functional levels
unless
you're adding 2003 domain controllers inside your environment.
Well,
the big shift
or
was
if you have
2000.
Them left over.
It's, you can run 2008 mode, 2008 R2 mode, if you still have 2003 domain controllers. You just can't add any new ones in 2003.
Yeah, true.
Right?
True.
So you don't, by switching to 2008 R2, by switching to 2008 R2, you don't all of a sudden cut off all your 2003 domain controllers. They still continue to function, still continue
sure,
to work.
Sure. So really, the answer, I guess, is no. Or
functional,
yes, but.
Functional level
you're
2008
fine.
R2, but you can still have 2003 domain controllers in place. You don't have to have a complete move over that's there. So that's a good thing to know. Back to my demo here, because I want to get back to this.
Real quick, you were just also
referencing. We got another progress bar coming.
I know we do, but you have another edge server. You're talking about edge server. You're talking about like a TMG?
Could be a TMG.
A lot of people asking about TMG.
Could be a TMG. Could be a UAG. Could be a Cisco PIX firewall. Could be a Linksys
right.
device.
And this isn't
with
taking
NAT.
The place of it, though.
This simply sits behind it as one okay. configuration option if you choose behind an edge device with a single NIC, if I wanted to. So this is deployed in a single network adapter.
I'll point that out. There's a lot of questions
network.
About that.
Right.
Okay, go ahead, and we'll wait for the next progress
I'm
bar.
Leaving it as Edge just for the defaults to be able to show you guys. The public name or IPv4 address used by clients to connect up to this remote access server, I'm going to say remote.adatum.com to be able to do it. More progress bar. Passing through it.
So now is when I should ask you.
Now you can ask me questions.
Too late, I already asked you.
Yeah, I know.
There are no questions left in the queue at all.
You've answered them all?
There's none left.
I believe that when I see it, my mm-hmm. friend. When I see it.
I think on Friday there'll be none left.
Cool. We won't be here on Friday. It's waiting, configuring, waiting. There's at least one more question they want you to look at, Ed.
Apparently it's for me.
Nice.
I don't see which one because they're coming.
Hit the refresh.
No,
button.
It's refreshing. I don't know which one's the last one.
Caruso. You know what? While this guy's running, I'm going to.
What about Rick's adatum clause?
Adamantium.
Adamantium. Okay. Our Caruso had another really good one earlier.
Can we flip back to the slides? Pick around the slides. This is digressing into silliness.
Well, here. No, and remember, we do want to go back to that one slide and see if we can address the minimal, smaller environment.
I'll see what I can find. We've got PKI as you see how to configure Active Directory Domain Services, PKI networking services for direct access, and then you'll see how to configure a direct access server, and then the client side, which is a group policy setting. That's all it is. Windows 7 versus Windows 8 client implementation. You've got Windows 7, basically, there's no tool to monitor the direct access status. Is it online or offline? It needs to be set up manually for selected sites in a multi-site environment, and also it needs to have a certificate. Windows 8 client systems that are enterprise-based include in-the-box user interface for direct access for troubleshooting. It also is able to automatically choose the best multi-site deployment based on latency of the networks to get to those sites, and can also be used in deployments that does not require a full PKI implementation as long as you have certificates for authentication purposes for individual systems. And that's about all I've got for my slides. And I got 3 minutes left where this wraps up, and my demos are still cranking away on that hold screen, man.
Okay.
So we're going to have to say... Pass it off to...
That's how you set it up. We can't test it anyway.
We can't test it. The wizard interface can be set up and run inside a small lab environment behind a regular firewall without a PKI infrastructure for Windows 8-based client systems to try this out and can definitely be done in a lab. And so you can try it out. There's no good documentation on it specifically for implementation with Windows 8 and for Server 2012. And as well, I do believe, I'll confirm with some extra links and stuff, that there's also a hands-on lab being tried this out. I do know that if you have the option of being able to attend this lovely thing that my team puts on once in a while, an extended worldwide audience side of things, this thing called IT Camps. There actually is a section on direct access that you can actually set up and work with in a lab environment, and I know that lab environment like that.
All right.
That's the small, medium business. This is the enterprise one we're trying to show off here, and that's it.
So you're telling them to pay no attention to the man behind the curtain and just trust the wizard.
I'm going to suggest that, again, for this section, there's a lot of information that's in here. Direct access is something that's definitely been simplified. I showed you the complex pieces to it. You do need to know it inside and out for being able to prepare for that upgrade in your support skills because it will definitely be talked about because it is new and is some new configuration options that are there. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I'm going to call it done, my friend.
Yeah, well, you know. Thanks, everyone, for sticking around for seven...
Is it 7 hours?
Been seven, eight?
I don't know. It's
six,
it's
three,
six
four,
modules,
six
about,
modules
an hour
about an hour each.
Woo, craziness.
A lot of information. A lot of information.
And we'll be back again to do it again.
Yes. If it wasn't enough, do it all again tomorrow.
You got it. So thank you very much for joining us, everybody. See you after the long break. Hope you enjoy your
really
day, evening,
time,
or whatever
now.
It is. Now it is nap time.
Okay.
Enjoy your time wherever it is you are. We'll stay on the queues to answer more questions as we go.